Hi, I'm Jen Suliafu, and I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. Life is an exciting game with many twists and turns. It gets really good when we begin to learn how it works and how to win. I believe that no matter where someone's life is at, we have the power to make radical shifts to create a life that truly honors us. I live for awakenings, so let's get to it, darlings. Okay, everyone, welcome back. Rob, welcome to the show. I'm so honored to have you on today. And I want to just start with you telling people a little bit about who you are and what you do. Tell us a little bit about your life's work.
Well, I am the author of three books in the New Age or body, mind, spirit genre, Your Soul's Plan, Your Soul's Gift, and Your Soul's Love. The premise of all three is that we ourselves plan our lives, including our biggest challenges, before we're born, before we come into body. And so in the books, I explore people's pre-birth plans in two different ways. One, working with mediums and channels who can access that kind of information. And two, through the form of hypnosis I practice called a between life soul regression. In that kind of hypnosis session, people speak directly with their council of elders, the non-physical beings who oversee their evolution, and they can ask literally any question on any subject. So most people ask, what did I plan? Why did I make those plans? How am I doing in terms of fulfilling my plan? And how can I better fulfill my plan? So in the three books, and also in the online workshops and the private sessions, the focus is on helping people understand why you chose to incarnate in a human body on planet Earth, and in particular, why did you plan your greatest challenges? You can read large portions of all three books, actually, at yoursoulsplan.com.
Yeah, wow. So I read Your Soul's Plan is the one that's how I found you. And I read it years ago in physical form. I would read it as I was going to bed at night. And it had such a profound effect on my life. So I want to thank you personally for writing that book. It's so, it's amazing to me that I'm sitting in front of you right now, because, you know, when you have these people that when you're going on your journey and you're trying to find just answers for yourself, and you have people that put themselves out there, put the work into actually publishing a book. I know it takes a lot of work, I'm sure. I'm sure it does, right? Especially when you're, you know, trying to figure out your first book. But I have such gratitude for people that actually follow through on that. And you are one person that your work is just so life-changing for so many people and such a gift, because what it does is it helps to me understanding soul plans and soul contracts are the most important component for forgiving. And when we can forgive, then we can finally be free, right?
Yeah, that is one of the major intentions of work. And thank you for saying that. I'm honored by your words.
Yeah, so beautiful. I was reading a little bit about your story, and you went to a medium for the first time. That's how you got into this work.
That was the thing that really kicked it off. That was on May 7 of 2003. And I remember that date in particular, because really my life changed on that day. I had been in the corporate world for a number of years, doing marketing communications, did not like that at all, and really had this nagging sense that I had come to Earth to do something else, but I didn't know what it was. And so almost out of desperation, because at that time, I wasn't even sure I believed in mediumship, but nothing else was helping. And so I thought, why not? I'll give this a try. So I went into this session quite doubtful. And the first thing the medium said to me was, your spirit guides are here. I said, what is a spirit guide? I mean, I never even heard the term before. So she explained that. And then she said, your guides would like to speak directly with you. And she started to channel them. And right out of the box, they said to me, you planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born. And I'll tell you, I just shook my head and I said, well, why in the world would I have done something like that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. Now, what was really compelling is that they then launched into this very lengthy and detailed monologue in which they went through my challenges one by one and explained why I had planned them. And you have to understand, I had not told them anything about myself. I had not told the medium anything about myself. Here they are laying out my life in incredible detail. They knew literally everything about me. So when you're talking to beings who know everything about you without you saying anything, gives them a lot of credibility. And this experience just blew my mind wide open. And it really created quite a deep healing for me. And then I thought, well, if this perspective can create this kind of healing for me, then surely it can do the same for others. That was when I first started to think about writing a book about it.
Wow. And now you do sessions with people, correct? You do sessions and you put them in, you do what's called hypnotherapy, correct?
Well, we
I'm
don't
saying
call it
that
hypnotherapy because I'm not actually a therapist.
right. Okay.
So I'm a hypnotist and we call it hypnosis. It's a legality, but it's important.
I see. Okay. So I have when I was getting ready for this segment, I have so many questions that I know people, which I know you answer a lot of these in your book, but we're going to go through these because I know that so many people have these questions
Good question.
and they haven't read your book. And so we're going to go through them. And it's going to be really, really beautiful for people to hear. But the first thing I want to ask you is what's the point to life? In your work, what have you found the point to life is?
You know, it's actually really quite simple. There are many, many different lessons we learn in the Earth School, but they all have a common denominator. If you distill them down, the common denominator is that we are learning lessons in how to more freely and fully give and receive love. That's why we're here.
Okay, beautiful. So when you hit on why would you plan painful events, can you speak a little bit more to why people would plan that their painful events, and are all painful events planned? So like car accidents, addiction, I mean, all the different painful things somebody goes through, do they plan it all? Do they plan to go to a family that is really, really poor? Do they plan to go to a family that's abusive? Are they all planned?
Not everything is planned, but we have to define what the word planned means here. When we talk about everybody having a pre-birth plan or a life plan, it doesn't mean they have just one plan, nor does it mean that everything is set in stone. By and large, the planning is set up as potentials, probabilities, high probabilities, occasionally probabilities so high as to be almost certain. Almost everything that is planned falls somewhere along that continuum. There are some things that are set in stone. For example, your choice of parents. Once you're born, obviously you can't change that. Your parents are who they are. Or let's say you plan to be born with a physical handicap that can't be treated by medical science in the time period in which you're incarnating, which is something you would know ahead of time. Then, short of what we call a miracle, you will have that handicap for the duration of that lifetime. But the number of things set in stone like that is very small. They're set up as potentials, and which potentials actualize depend upon your free will decisions, which is another way of saying whether or not you're learning the lessons you plan to learn. The general way this works is that if you use your free will to make decisions such that you learn the lessons quickly, then a lot of the planned challenges will never happen because you've obviated the need for them. But when things start coming back around, and especially if they come back in increasingly intense form, that's often your soul really trying to get your attention, tapping you on the shoulder and say, hey, there's something here that you aren't quite noticing. Pay closer attention.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. So some things are predetermined, but then when we get here, because that's why I always had a hard time understanding is like, okay, so if things are predetermined, where does free will come in? But you just spoke to that. So the free will, so we live on a planet of free will, and we are manifesting and creating as we get here, correct?
That's
And
correct.
so we create before we come here, and then we create when we're here.
That's
So it's
exactly
two
right.
ways.
Yeah. You might think of it as like a video game. So let's say you have a video game on the screen and the computer in front of you, and you have one of those little avatars, and there are different levels, and the objective is to move the avatar up the different levels to the top of the pyramid. And as you go across these levels, the avatar comes into contact with all sorts of challenges that he or she has to surmount. So you are controlling the avatar's movements with the joystick. There are certain things you can't do because they're not contained within the software of the game. So even if you want to, you can't make the avatar jump out of the screen and materialize in 3D in the room you're in. The software doesn't permit that kind of thing to happen. But within the confines of the game, of the software, you have total free will. If you make wise decisions, you advance up the levels very quickly and painlessly. If you don't make wise decisions, the avatar gets injured or killed, and you start over again on the lower level. That's essentially the way it's working with pre-birth plans.
So with each soul, right? So have we all lived multiple lives? Pretty much everybody. I mean, have you ever taken anyone into a session and it was their first time around?
I don't, off the top of my head, I can't remember a single client where that came up. Having said that, there are young souls and what you might call middle-aged souls and older souls, and some people are in one of their first few incarnations on Earth. Other people have been here hundreds, sometimes even thousands of times. And in between incarnations on Earth, you have incarnations in other physical planets, you have non-physical lifetimes, you go to realms that are pure emotion or pure color or pure sound. I mean, everything you can think of and a lot of things you can't think of, it's out there somewhere. And you go and you have these different experiences in between Earth incarnations.
Wow. So when we talk about your background, so you basically were in the corporate world. Were you raised with religion? Did you believe in an afterlife? Did you have a belief system, or did this totally radically shift that?
I was raised in a Reform Jewish family. We were pretty much non-religious. The only thing we did was celebrate the high holidays. And I had a bar mitzvah, but that was about it. I didn't really have any particular religious beliefs, but I always had a strong sense of a higher power. I always had faith that there is a higher power, and that there's a lot more to life than what we see on the surface. And then what happened for me, my spiritual awakening really started to pick up steam when I was in my 30s. I didn't recognize this at the time, but I see it clearly now. I was getting guidance from my spirit guides to read books about near-death experiences. And I read many, many of those. That really opened me up. And that set the stage for something that happened when I was 40, which was the session with the medium. But then something else, right around the same time that we haven't talked about yet, I had a spiritually transformative experience in which I was doing nothing more than walking down the street in the middle of the afternoon. And I had this experience in which every time I looked at another person, I was overcome by pure, overwhelming, unconditional love for that person. Those are the words that get closest to it, but there really are no words to describe it. It was a transcendent or a divine kind of love. And you could say that I was caused to know. I was caused to know in this experience that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love. I got that message loud and clear. What I didn't know at the time was why this was happening. That became clear a couple of years later, because by that time, I had looked at a number of people's pre-birth plans for your soul's plan. And what I had found was, in every case, without exception, the pre-birth plan was always based on complete unconditional love for every soul involved. And then I realized, aha, that experience walking down the street 2 years ago, that was gifted to me so that when I found this result in my research, I would be absolutely certain that what I was finding was true.
Wow. So when people have a pre-birth plan, this is so such a big part to understand for people to hear. And that is, so often the people that cause you the most pain really, really love you.
Yeah.
Can you kind of speak to that as far as like how those people show up? Maybe give us an example of someone that you've worked with and a story in one of your books where that showed up.
Well, I can use myself as an example. I grew up in a family in which my mother, who has some significant mental health issues, was very emotionally abusive to me for the first 16 years of my life. And I have no doubt that we have a long history together and a lot of love between us. And so someone might ask, well, why in the world would you ask her to play that kind of role? People on the soul level ask other souls who they love and who love them dearly to play this kind of a role for a couple of different reasons. First, if you're going to choose that kind of, I call it a learning through opposites life plan. If you're going to choose that kind of challenging life plan, you want the abusive person to be somebody you can trust to play the role correctly. And that's a big point. You're not just going to hand that assignment out to some random soul that you've never incarnated with before. You need to know that you could trust that person. Think about what happened in Jesus's life with Judas. I'll bet you he chose Judas for very, very good reasons, because he could trust him to play the role the way it needed to be played. So same thing in my family and many, many people's families who grow up with abuse. You choose a soul that you know you can trust to play the role the way you want it played. And the reason you set this up, it's intended to drive you within. So the absence of compassion in the external environment is intended to drive you within, where hopefully over time you will cultivate self-compassion. That's the first half of the plan. The second half of the plan, which usually takes place some years later, is that you will take the self-compassion you've cultivated and turn it outward in service to others. That service to others component is in literally every single pre-birth plan I've ever looked at. It's always there in some form, to one degree or another. And I understand that this is a very difficult concept for a human being to wrap their mind around. But you know, when you plan your life, you're not doing the planning with the human brain. You're doing it on the soul level, and you have expanded, we could call it expanded intelligence, expanded wisdom, expanded awareness. You see a much bigger picture than you can possibly see from the vantage point of an incarnate personality. And you see how the pieces fit together, how if you're successful in cultivating compassion through this experience of abuse, then the ripple effects will radiate out and this person's life will be changed and that person's and this other person's. It's very hard to have that kind of awareness when you're here in body, but you will see that played out in your life review when the lifetime is over.
Wow. So what about people that where there's big events that multiple people are impacted by somebody either causing pain to the planet or, you know, a big leader or somebody that bombs a big building or something like those big events, a plane crashing, stuff like that?
That's actually the primary focus of the new book I'm working on right now. So I'm just in the initial stages of exploring those kinds of events. But I'll share with you one that came up in channeling sessions for an earlier book, although it's not actually in any of the books. We ended up talking with some guides and some ascended masters about the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia a number of years ago. And you might recall about 100,000 people were killed. So I asked what happened there. And what I was told was that those 100,000 or so souls, they looked at the state of the earth from the other side. And they said, we want the Earth to be at a certain vibration or a certain frequency by a certain point in linear time. And if it looks like it isn't going to get there, then we agree to give our lives in a large-scale natural disaster because we know the result of that disaster will be this worldwide outpouring of love and compassion that will elevate the frequency of the whole planet. And that's exactly the way it played out. You had all the governments of the world temporarily put aside their differences to coordinate and funnel aid into Southeast Asia. And that outpouring of love and compassion raised the frequency of the whole planet. They accomplished exactly what they set out to do.
Wow. Wow. So what about what's happening right now on planet Earth? So that raised the frequency back then. I don't remember when that was, 2007-ish, maybe somewhere around there.
Maybe a little earlier. I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah. So that raised the frequency. Does that mean that it's just been going up since then? Because it sure feels like it's all over the place. So what do you think's happening in kind of, can you speak to like, what's happening as far as this shift we're going through? I think a lot of people can feel it. What do you see happening in the future? And you know, are we going from this, we've heard a lot about the Piscean energy going into Aquarian energy. I don't know, like, if you want to kind of speak to what's happening with that, with the shift we're going through.
So my understanding is that the Earth is going through an ascension process, meaning that it's ascending or moving up in vibration. And specifically what it's doing is moving from, most people say the third dimension, but really the correct term is third density. It has moved from third density into fourth. That's where we are now. And it's going to move into fifth density, which is a vibration of oneness or unity consciousness. The reason this is happening is because there's a tremendous influx of light direct from source. This light is flooding the planet and it's elevating the frequency of the entire planet and every being within, on, or around the planet. The light has the effect of bringing to the surface everything unlike itself. In other words, everything of a low vibration. The term for this is purification. So the entire planet is purifying, all the countries of Earth are purifying, governments, businesses, institutions, and it's happening not just collectively, but individually in each person's life as well. Each person is going through a purification process, even if they're not aware of it. So the reason purification is happening is that in order for Earth to get to fifth density and be at that very high vibration of oneness, we've got all kinds of low vibrational, fear-based processes and institutions and ways of doing things here that can't even exist in fifth density, and they need to be cleared or purified. So how does that happen? Well, the light brings it to conscious awareness, and then essentially what you need to do, or what humanity needs to do, is recognize it with conscious awareness, thank it, whatever it may be, for whatever it has taught us, bless it, and then release it. That's essentially what the purification process consists of. So because the light is bringing to the surface everything of a lower vibration, it appears on the surface that things are getting worse. And on the surface, they actually are getting worse. But that's only happening temporarily because it's taking us to a place. And don't ask me when we'll get there. I don't know, and I don't think anyone does. But it's taking us to a place where these lower vibrational fear-based ways of thinking and being and doing, they'll just be ancient history, and the Earth will be a shining jewel in the heavens. It will be a completely different way of life here.
So if we're going from third density to now fourth density, and then going to fifth density, is fifth density love then? Is that, would you call that the vibration of love?
I would call it the vibration of unconditional love. Yeah.
And what would three density be compared to, and then also four density? Would four density be higher than three and more like wisdom, to where we start to see what What would that be?
Third density is essentially fear-based, and it's a relatively low vibration. Fourth density is largely about a shift from mind-based consciousness to heart-based consciousness. And I think that's where we're at now. We're still, for the most part, I think, in mind-based consciousness, but people's hearts are opening, and that shift is underway, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel it. I do. What do you think about I feel like I'm seeing a big shift in the children that are coming into the planet. What do you think about that? Do you feel like they're at a higher level of consciousness? Do you feel like there's a difference in them compared to past generations?
My understanding is that there a lot of the children coming in now are very, very old souls who are bringing in great wisdom and tremendous gifts, and they will be the ones who will really complete the shift from fourth density into fifth density. But it's a very difficult experience and process for them because they're wired quite differently than the older generations. And what often happens when they're children, they start to express in their own unique ways, which is what it should be, but their parents don't understand what's going on. And so all this pressure is put on them to conform, be like the other kids, be whatever the parents' concept of a good child is. And that kind of pressure to be other than who they uniquely are is traumatizing to them. And so it's quite a challenge for them.
Yeah. That is really beautiful what you just said. It's going to help so many parents to hear that because I'm seeing this big time. I'm trying to understand it too. I actually just went into my daughter's school this morning because she's 11 years old, and last week one of her friends committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
And I went in and talked to the assistant principal, and I was talking to her about how, because I'm in my 40s, she's in her 40s, how these children are different. And it's hard to explain this when you're just talking in common terms at the school, in the office, because sometimes, I mean, it's a deep subject. But what's happening is our generation does not understand the younger generation, and it's causing a lot of pain. I also understand that, on a level of your work, it's profound because you speak about suicide. And one day when the timing is right, I will talk to my daughter more about that. I know right now she just needs to kind of feel what she's feeling. But it is a very I never thought that it was ever the plan. I thought everything else was probably the plan, but not suicide. And then once I started listening to your work, it is sometimes the plan. So can you kind of tell people about that?
Yeah, there's an entire chapter in my second book, Your Soul's Gift, about the pre-birth planning of suicide. And the person who's the subject of the chapter there is an American woman. Her name is Carolyn. She lost her only child, a son named Cameron, to suicide. It was just a few days after Cameron had graduated from high school. So she thought he was about to go off to college and start doing great and exciting things in the world. And instead, she came home and found him hanging from a rafter in the attic. And she was the one who had to climb up there, cut the rope, and bring the body down. So she and I did a channeling session in which we spoke to both Cameron and Jesus. Jesus comes in at the beginning of the session, and I ask him, is suicide planned before we're born? He says, it is never planned as a certainty, but it is planned as a possibility, probability, or occasionally a probability so high as to be almost certain. And then he says that was the case with Cameron. He was bringing back into body unhealed energies from past lives for the purpose of healing them. And he did this to such an extent that it caused great depression and anxiety. And it was foreseen in his pre-birth planning session that a suicide would be highly likely. Now, people will say, well, why in the world would a soul plan a life in which a suicide is highly likely? You have to understand, some souls are very ambitious. They want to accomplish a lot in a single incarnation. He wanted to heal all of these unhealed energies from past lives. Also, if you don't succeed with your pre-birth intentions, there's no sense of failure about it. The soul doesn't judge that. The soul doesn't think the personality has failed. It isn't evaluated in human terms like that. What happens is the soul has a sense of incompletion. We didn't finish what we set out to do, so let's finish it another lifetime. There's no judgment or shame at all involved in that. Anyway, Jesus then steps aside. Cameron comes in, and he talks very poignantly with his mother about how he's been speaking with her at length while she's asleep at night. They meet in the astral realm, and he's talking to her about how it was not her fault and she didn't fail him in any way. That, by the way, is the single most common comment that people who have taken their lives make when they're contacted on the other side. They always say, it was nobody else's fault. It was my decision and my decision alone, my responsibility. Nobody else failed me. So then Jesus comes back in. And I want to call your audience's attention to pages 410 to 411 in Your Soul's Gift. Those two pages have what I think is probably the single most healing piece of information I've ever come across in the years I've been doing this work. And essentially what Jesus tells us on those two pages is that every suicide that could have been prevented was prevented. And then he goes on to explain what he means by that. And what he means is that if the suicidal person has the slightest openness or willingness to change their mind, Spirit knows and Spirit stages an intervention. That means that if the suicide was completed, the person had no openness or willingness to change their mind, which in turn means there was literally nothing anybody else could have done. So if you lost somebody you loved to suicide, there was literally nothing you could have done to prevent it. And so I would say to anybody listening to this conversation, if you lost somebody you care about to suicide, take any guilt or self-blame you may feel and set it down and step away from it. That's what your loved one wants for you. And again, there was literally nothing you could have done.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
What about drug overdoses?
There's a chapter, well, part of a chapter in the first book, Your Soul's Plan, about a soul who plans to have a heroin addiction. And he does this for reasons of his own. Essentially, what he wanted was to create a magical kind of feeling in his life. And this was the method he chose to do that. He'd been involved in explorations of what we might call magic in past lives and wanted to do another variation on that in this lifetime. He chose as his mother a soul that he'd had many, many past incarnations with. There's a lot of love between them. What was interesting there is that she is very highly evolved, so much so that she had no more need to incarnate in the Earth School. So she was finished. But he went to her and said, here's my plan. I'm going to be going through this very difficult heroin addiction. I would like you to be the parent who shepherds me through this. And out of her great love for him, even though she didn't have to come back for her own reasons, she said, okay, I will be the mother who guides you through that. You know, in our society, we judge drug addiction. It's not looked at that way from a soul planning level. Nothing really is judged the way we judge it at a human level. Everything is just seen as opportunities for experience, healing, growth, and learning. There's no judgment at all.
So I live in Utah, and here it is one of the highest suicide rates here. There's a lot of pressure. I don't know exactly what that is about, why the highest suicide rate here is in Utah. I'm sure there's many, many parts to it. But on that note, you know, many people that end up committing suicide are in the LGBTQ community. So do people plan their sexuality before they come to planet Earth?
They do. Those people are our teachers. And the lesson they're teaching is quite simple. They are teaching us that love is love, no matter what it looks like.
I wanted to hear you say that. That's so, that's so beautiful. I want people to hear that so much, because that's exactly, I look at them as spiritual warriors. That's what I say. They're spiritual warriors. They were strong enough to come here to say, I might not look like you think I should look in your rigid little box, but love me anyways. And that is so beautiful. So beautiful. What about, so when we look at it, like speaking to this younger generation and me going and speaking with this woman this morning, right? So if it's part of the plan, that is, if sometimes it's part of the plan, right? Sometimes it was planned to, for someone to leave due to a suicide, to help wake people up, to help the world heal. So do you believe that, you know, part of it, you could say, well, that's part of the plan, but it's part of the plan so that we can, like you said, tap us on the shoulder to make positive changes, correct? Not to just say, oh, it's part of the plan. It was supposed to happen, but to say, okay, it was part of the plan, but what can we do to move more towards love?
That's the bottom line. And then there are many, many permutations of the lesson of learning how to love freely and fully. And that's essentially what all of my work is about, is helping people who have gone through great challenges understand what are the underlying lessons. So what that does is, number one, it pulls you out of victim consciousness, because obviously if you believe you planned it, then you're not a victim. But then if you take it a step further and you come into some awareness of why you planned it, then you can go about learning those underlying lessons in a much more conscious and much less painful and much less arduous way. So we have a number of online workshops. These are all on the events page at yoursoulsplan.com. The focus there is helping you to understand, why did you plan what you planned?
So can you give us an example of someone planning something really painful and then coming to the understanding in your sessions as to why they planned something really painful?
Well, probably the most dramatic example, the last story in Your Soul's Plan, which is in the chapter on accidents, it's about a woman who planned before she was born to be blown up in a bomb explosion. And the reason she did this is that she wanted to have an incarnation as a gifted healer. And she knew before she was born that if she could succeed in healing herself from being in a bomb explosion, then she could take all of that wisdom and knowledge about healing and turn it outward in service to others. And that's exactly how it played out. She was in her 60s at the time I talked with her for the book, but the story she shared with me, when she was in her 20s, she was an administrative assistant at a college in California. And one of her daily duties was to pick up her boss's mail. The mailboxes were in the basement of the building in which she worked. So one day, her name is Christina. One day, Christina went down those stairs to those mailboxes and put her hand into the mailbox, not knowing that somebody had planted a pipe bomb in her boss's mailbox. When she inserted her hand, the pipe bomb detonated. The force from this explosion picked her up, threw her 10 feet backwards against a concrete wall. Well, both eardrums were ruptured, two fingers were severed, flames scorched her entire body from head to toe. When she got to the hospital, doctors had to hold magnets over her eyeballs to extract the shrapnel. So this is a level of suffering that, you know, is almost unimaginable to the average person. Well, her recovery took 2 years and 10 reconstructive surgeries. At one point during the 2-year period, she was lying in her hospital bed in a tremendous amount of pain, when she heard this voice inside her head. And the voice was one of her spirit guides who said to her, "You planned this." And of course, she said, "Why?" Not an unreasonable question, right? And then the guide said, "You wanted to have a lifetime as a gifted healer, and you knew that if you could heal yourself first, then you could go on to heal others." And that's exactly what she did. She got through those 10 surgeries, turned her own life around, then went back to school, got a degree, a PhD in speech language pathology, set up a private clinical practice, and now has healed literally thousands of people. She actually has the ability to go into somebody's brain energetically, meaning non-invasively, and restore language processing capability in people who have lost that due to stroke or accident. So a remarkably gifted healer, and she can only do this because she healed herself first from that bomb explosion. You know, when I talked to her for the book, she said two amazing things to me. The first was, she said, "Rob, I have completely forgiven the person who planted that bomb." Now remember, she had magnets held above her eyeballs in the hospital. And yet here she is saying in total sincerity that she's forgiven the person who inflicted that pain on her. But then she said something even more remarkable. She said, "Rob, I am deeply grateful to the person who planted that bomb." The reason she's grateful is that she understands where this fits in her pre-birth plan. And now, you know, years later, she can look back and say, "Aha, I can only do the healing work I'm doing now because I went through that very painful experience then." It's a completely different way of looking at life challenges.
Yeah. Wow. So you keep using, or you used a couple times, the term Earth School. Earth is a school. So just like this woman, she's learned so much in this lifetime, right? And then turns around and helps heal others. So do we ever go backwards? Like, can you come here? And the idea of it, I would assume, is you keep going forward, learning new lessons, kind of like each grade. You start in, you know, preschool, and then you go up as you go through the different courses. Do you ever go from like seventh grade back to third grade or anything like that? Meaning, do we regress?
There are people who regress, and unfortunately, a fairly large number of them. I think it's a small percentage of the total population, but the absolute number is not insignificant. And the way it happens, it's basically a slippery slope. The person starts by making some relatively minor, selfish, or fear-based decision. And so their inner light dims just a little bit. They're a little bit more disconnected from source, from guidance. But because of that disconnection, it then becomes a little bit easier to make the next selfish or fear-based decision, which can lead more easily to the next. And then these decisions become bigger and more important. And so they go down that slippery slope and get to a point where their inner light, it's still there. It can't ever go out completely. But it's so dimmed that it's not really influencing their thoughts or behavior. And they themselves are completely unaware of it for the most part.
So when they transition out of this world, then what happens? Are they now aware of what happened? And do they have that consciousness to where they can now know that they dimmed their light and they're aware of it?
Yeah, everyone has a life review, as far as I know, anyway. And in the life review, you not only see what you did and didn't do, but you also feel all the feelings you caused everybody else to feel, both positive and negative. So if you've hurt a lot of people, you're going to feel their pain in the life review. And that is an extremely difficult experience for any soul to have to go through. And it generally creates the need on that soul's part to plan another lifetime in which they will be on the receiving end of a similar kind of treatment, not as a form of punishment. I want to make that clear. It's not a form of punishment. It's a desire to understand what you cause somebody else to feel.
So would that be karma?
That is karma. Karma is essentially a feeling of incompletion. So if you are somebody who did a lot of harm to others, then when you feel their pain in the life review, you're going to feel a sense of incompletion, most likely, until you yourself have experiences where you feel something similar.
I remember hearing that in one of, because I've also listened to Your Soul's Gift. So I don't remember which book it was that I heard that in with you, but I remember hearing the karma aspect, and it surprised me because I've always thought of karma as like if I hurt someone, then the next life I've got to do something good, right? To make up for it. But it's more about, like you said, bringing it into balance to where you feel what they felt,
Yeah, that's
not where you have to try to play the good role.
that. But there is positive karma too. I mean, if you do kind and loving things for other people, you will feel what you cause them to feel in the life of you, and that will be a wonderful experience. And then there could be a feeling of incompletion there as well. The person that you express this love and kindness to, they might feel incomplete in the sense that they never fully returned the love or kindness. And so they may ask you to be part of their next incarnation so that they have an opportunity to give love and kindness to you.
So, do we incarnate with the same souls over and over again, and just play different parts?
That's basically what is happening. So everyone is a member of a soul group, which is a collection of souls who are at more or less the same stage of evolution or the same frequency. And you take turns playing every possible role for and with each other. Mother and daughter, father and son, brother and sister, husband and wife, best friends, mortal enemies, teacher and student, even murderer and the one who is murdered. And again, there's no judgment of any of these roles at the soul level. They're all seen as opportunities for learning, healing, and expansion.
So, like for example, with me and my husband, is it likely that we are love interests in many lives together, or are we most likely going to play different roles, like best friends? Or it's so trippy to think of like father and daughter or mother and son or anything like that, but is there any possibility, or is it many times? Because like with him, when I met him, I just felt like completely different. Like I felt like the best way I can describe is I felt like I came home for the first time in my life when I met my husband, and I was 30 years old almost. And so it makes me think like he's my soulmate, right? That's how I feel with him. And it's a very different love than I've ever experienced in this lifetime. So is it likely, does it tell me anything? Is it likely that we live multiple lives together?
I would say it's very, very likely. And probably some of them you were romantic partners, and you probably played a number of other roles for each other as well. And there would have been a number of lifetimes in which he was female and you were male, or you were both male, or you were both female.
Yeah. It's so interesting,
Yeah.
right? I
Yeah.
always think, saying that and looking at it from that perspective, I always think of like we just look at life like through this little tiny pinhole, and then when you have these kinds of conversations, it just like really broadens that lens to look at life in a different way. It's so fascinating.
Well, that reminds me of something that I think probably the single most common thing that was said to me by spirit in the many, many channeling sessions for the books. They said again and again, nothing on earth is as it seems. And it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what about when people transition out of this world and drop their outfit? Oh, first off, do we plan our outfit? Do we plan our ears, our nose, our nationality, our height, our body structure, all of that? Did we choose that?
You did, and my understanding is you're given several options. And the options are intended to facilitate the learning of whatever lessons you're planning to learn. So you discuss with your guides the pros and cons of these different options, and you're shown scenes from the upcoming lifetime. You can immerse yourself in the scenes and feel what you're going to feel when they happen, and then you make a choice.
Wow. Okay. And when we transition and drop our outfit and we transition into spirit, where do we go? What have you found the other world is like?
Well, it's important, I think, to say first, you aren't actually going anywhere. It's my understanding that space is an illusion. So, third density where we are, the analogy that's often used is Russian nesting dolls, where there's a big doll and a smaller one and then a smaller one. It's like that with the densities. Third density is within fourth, which is within fifth, which is within sixth, and so on and so on. So place, location, space, these are all illusions created by the five senses. When the Indian guru Ramana Maharshi was dying, his devotees were gathered in a circle around his bed. And one of them said, was crying and said, "Oh, master, master, please don't leave us." And he opened his eyes and he said, "Where would I go?" And that's what he was referring to. But what happens is you move up in vibration. So your spirit or astral body leaves the physical body and it returns to home or the other side, whatever term you'd like to use for it. What usually happens at that point is that people are greeted by loved ones, members of their soul group, angels, masters, figures of spiritual significance to them. It's essentially a homecoming and a party of sorts. It's like graduation day from spirit's perspective. And then you have a period of acclimation, getting used to being back in a non-physical realm. And then you do your life review, and then you decide what your next step will be in your evolution.
Do as far as like time goes, I guess this is maybe a silly question, but when you plan your next lifetime or your next step in evolution, are you waiting? Is it a long time, or is it possible that somebody passes away in my lifetime and then they come back? Like, for example, somebody's father passes away or their grandfather and then comes back as their baby, as their
That
son.
does happen. My understanding is that in terms of linear time, there's usually a period of 25 to 75 years that pass before somebody will come back into body. The other thing to keep in mind there is that, when you're planning your next lifetime, it's not done chronologically in linear time sequence. It's like the soul has a history book in front of it that has literally no beginning and no end. And the soul is flipping through the pages looking for the ideal circumstances in which to learn certain lessons. But the ideal circumstances, that could be, ancient Rome, or it could be the United States in the year 3000, or anywhere at any point in linear time.
Wow. So does hell exist?
Not as an ongoing objective reality. But if you believe in hell and you believe that you are bad or have done bad things and deserve to be punished in a hellish environment, that will probably be your experience when you first cross over. Belief is a very powerful creative force. There's no ongoing divine reality to sustain a hellish experience. So it's always temporary, but you can certainly create that for yourself through your belief in it.
So that is possibly where, because you said that you went into the world of near-death experiences. I did too, and it opened up my. It's interesting that you said that, Rob, because you said it opened up your mind and heart enough to have your experience that you had after that. And that a very similar thing happened to me as well. But when you study or go into the near-death experience world Every once in a while, you'll have a story, at least for me. I've heard maybe a couple, not many, many of them, or most of them, tell you about the divine light, the love, the truth of who we are. But every once in a while, you will have someone who had a bit of a scary experience. And so that would be where it would come in because that was what they believed, or maybe they were feeling shame or guilt. Is that what
Yeah,
you're saying?
that's my understanding, isn't it? Free will is sacrosanct throughout the universe. So if you believe that you deserve to be punished for some reason and you want to punish yourself, that free will decision will be respected. You can do that if that is your choice.
Yeah, wow. What would be your understanding of who God is?
God is all that is. God is the ground of being. Everything you see, everything you don't see, it's all God.
Have you ever seen a movie that has been an accurate or helped explain the ideas that you write about?
There have been a couple. There was one with, I'm blanking on the actor's name. It was the guy who was in Network News, and I think Meryl Streep, the movie that I'm talking about, and both of their characters die. They cross back over to the other side, and it's very funny because when the Meryl Streep character was on Earth in body, she led this amazing life in which she essentially did everything right, and he was the guy who made all the mistakes. And so they're getting to know each other on the other side, and her life review is this huge celebration. And he keeps seeing these scenes where he came up short, but that was essentially correct in the way it was portrayed. And then there's another movie that is not well known at all. It was produced in Brazil and based on the work of the Brazilian medium, who I think his name was Chico Xavier, something like that. I think the movie is called Astral City, if I remember correctly. That movie had a lot of truth to it.
Wow. Okay. If we can, I'll see if we can find out the names of those movies and then we'll put them in the show notes. We'll definitely also put all of your information in there for people to be able to reach out to you. You have amazing work,
Thank
many
you.
books that are on Audible, and you can order them on in physical form and read them like I like to in on my nightstand right before I go to bed. Put some really, really good truths into your mind right before you go to bed to connect to the truth of who you really are, and then go to bed. It's a life changer. One thing I do want to speak to before we end here is so many times we see people that are such good people. They're loving so many people in their lives. They're loving their children, their spouse, and pouring love to everybody else. But they are in a space of a lot of negative self-talk to themselves and really not taking care of themselves, that maybe they feel a lot of guilt in their own life. How does that show up when you look at that from a soul perspective, or a different way? How
Well,
important is that?
your inner life is extremely important. I mean, that is essentially setting your vibration. Your vibration determines your experience in life. So if their inner world consists of a lot of negative self-talk, that's going to create a lot of suffering, obviously. It's going to hold their vibration down tremendously. And then that will permit lots of different kinds of negative experiences to come into their life. Meditation then becomes very important because you don't want to be identified with the thoughts. You want as much space between the you that you think is you and the thoughts. And you can cultivate that kind of spaciousness in meditation. My wife is a channel. She channels a collective called the Beings of Light. They have talked to us about this and they call it first layer awareness and second layer awareness, or a second layer is sometimes also called by them container awareness. So the first layer are your thoughts and feelings. Those are the objects of consciousness. They're not consciousness itself, they're the objects of it. The second layer or the container is you. You're a pure awareness. You're the pure awareness that is perceiving the contents, the thoughts and feelings. Most people don't have container or second layer awareness. They're at first layer awareness where they believe they are their thoughts and they are their feelings. But the more you meditate, the more spaciousness you get. You can step back from the thoughts and feelings. And then when that negative self-talk comes up, you don't have to argue with it, which is always counterproductive, by the way. It just strengthens it. You just say, oh, you know, there's that conditioned voice. That's how my parents used to talk to me. I know that's not who I really am. And then you just ignore it and go on with your day.
Very good. I love that. So we'll end with, if you could give people any message, what would your message be to the world?
Well, a really interesting piece of information that Spirit has shared with me in the channeling sessions for the books is that in order to be on Earth now at the time of planetary ascension, you had to make a 1 of 3 cut. In other words, there are 3 times as many souls as available bodies. And the way that decision was made is that you had to have something in particular to offer the ascension process. So, you know, our world is filled with people who feel small, weak, powerless, helpless, insignificant. Actually, nothing could be further from the truth. You made a 1 of 3 cut to be here, and you were chosen because you have something in particular to offer the ascension. So when you have those moments of feeling weak, small, powerless, helpless, and so forth, remind yourself of the truth. The truth is just the opposite. You are someone who is chosen to be here. And those who were chosen are considered among the bravest of the brave and the strongest of the strong.
Wow. That is powerful. So beautiful. So is there anything else you want to tell people? Any programs or places that they can find you? We will put a lot of information in the show notes for you, but anything you want to mention?
Well, all kinds of interesting online workshops. We have one called Awakening to Your Life Purpose, Discovering Your Life Plan, which can be done as a 1 day or a 2 day. And we do a group between life soul regression in there, in which you can talk to your council of elders and ask anything about your life plan. We have a higher self workshop to bring you into stronger contact with your higher self, and aligning with ascension workshop. We're working on one that will be about forgiveness, helping people learn how to forgive others. We have a new course starting with the Shift Network, which I think comes out in March of next year. So all of this is either on the events page at yoursoulsplan.com or it will be soon.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Rob, thank you so much for your time. This is such a profound conversation for so many people. And thank you for your work.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I want to thank you for doing this podcast. I think this show is very important. It's bringing a lot of much needed light and expanded understanding into our world. And it's really a beautiful form of service. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for being here and have a fabulous week. Bye for now.
Do you have a coach? I would love to take this journey with you to dive deep and start to shift those areas to create a life that truly honors you. I'll meet you on that bridge at whatever level you are ready, with either group or one-on-one coaching. You can check out my programs at jensuliafu.com/programs. Also, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and rate and review this show and give me your feedback. Also, please share this with your friends and family and be a lighthouse out in the world. Thanks for joining me.